5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
Happy Sunday, Croc Nation. Dr. Tommy and Ellie here. Angel Santana, other side of the glass. Have faith, let it begin. Angel, what do you say?
I am over here with my co-host, my son, Mr. Future Dr. Noah, and I am working on a pacifier right now. Happy early Valentine's Day, my friend.
You know what? Will you be my Valentine, Angel?
You were my Valentine the day I walked in and said yes to working with you, my friend.
There you go. Angel, we have two special guests today in studio, if you would call my office a studio.
Listen, I'm excited because I am so honored.
Well, don't get too excited because they're on the board. They have to be on the podcast. So they really didn't have a choice. So we have two of the greatest nurse navigators in the world. We have to my right, Jane O'Malley, who's our Garnet Medical Center lung navigator, and Sarah Sargente on my left, who is both. She's a double duty navigator. She does head, neck, and GI. So let's give them a hell of a welcome.
Aloha.
So, girls, I don't know if you've been up to date on our podcast. What we're going to be talking about today is a module on kindness of care and how we could put kindness back into the oncology world, which would make a heck of a difference for our patients and for our survivors. And this is our third, I think, installment, Angel?
That is correct, Amundo.
Yep. Last week we did empathy, and the week before we did deep listening. So this week we're going to move forward with a subject which is very near and dear to my heart, and there's actually a reason we have the navigators today, and that's called timeliness of care. Timeliness of care could be pretty much defined in a very strict and scientific way. It's basically the amount of time it takes for a medical system, for a healthcare system, to see a patient for a complaint, intervene on behalf of that patient, get some diagnostic testing, get some perhaps some biopsies and pathologies, get the results back to them, and then come forward with a treatment plan, and then institute that treatment plan. And in cancer, Angel, wouldn't you think intuitively that that should be a very quick process?
This is a very easy answer. Yes.
And would you be shocked if I told you that it is absolutely a broken system and it doesn't happen the way it should?
If you're a listener of the Croc podcast, I'm going to say I'm not surprised. If you're a new listener, I would be surprised because from day one, you have talked about how the system can be broken.
Yep. And the system, as far as timeliness of care, is very, very broken. So before we get to Lennon Reyna's paper and get to some nice quotes and things, I will tell a story. I try to tell a story every week. And the story this week is about my cell phone. We have a system. Now, this system is no different than any other. So if anybody out there thinks that this is a harassment or a negative podcast toward our home at Garnet Medical Center's Oncology Center, Cancer Center, absolutely not. We are just one of millions of health systems, cancer centers that all struggle with the same problem, and that's trying to get patients in and get things done properly for them in a very quick manner. And that is a system that's not just broken here, it's broken everywhere. When I get a call from a referring physician in regard to a referral, the first thing I will say, even if it's a physician I've never spoken to, is I want you to give them my cell phone number. And they pause for a second and they say to me, are you sure that's what you want? And I say to them, I absolutely want you to give them my cell phone number, because if you don't give them my cell phone number, I can't tell you when they're going to get in to see me. If you give them my cell phone number, then I have control of getting them into the center ASAP. So that is really indicative of what we should be doing, that sort of little extra kindness to help diminish that. The other thing that I think we do great here at Garnet is that we have the best navigators in the world. And we'll kind of let Jane and Sarah talk about navigators, and they're going to do their own podcast on navigators. But the reason why I have them here today is the navigators have made a tremendous impact in improving the timeliness of care, at least in our center, and I would suspect in all centers. Jane, why don't you start us off on navigation services and kind of that part as far as you trying to be the person to help, you know, expedite things.
Hi, everybody. We are so grateful to be part of the Croc Podcast family. So navigators, our whole function is to help patients from the beginning of their diagnosis throughout treatment to survivorship. Really, that's all we are here to do. And as Dr. Iannelli said, one of the primary focuses that we have is to make sure patients are seen in a timely manner and they get the care they need from the beginning, but all along the trajectory, because it's really important not to ignore symptoms and to make sure that the patients get the care they need in a timely way. So we're very grateful. We meet patients, we learn all about them. We also give them our cell number. We're available to them 24/7. And we want to make sure they have someone to call should they need an appointment or need some kind of service.
Sarah?
Yeah, and just to go on that, you know, patients are fearful, they're anxious, and, you know, when they hear the word cancer, and then the doctor says, well, now you have to have a test, and you have to go here and see this doctor, it's overwhelming for them. So some patients, you know, just don't know where to go. So that's really the navigator's job, is to break down those barriers and kind of help them with that, get them right to their care that they need.
Now, Angel, I'm not going to, jump the gun and give everybody a sneak peek to our navigator podcast. But when these professionals tell you that this is what they do so much more than that. They are above and beyond, not just timeliness of care, but, you know, empathy that's required to help a cancer survivor get through their journey is on their shoulders, and they have very big, strong shoulders. I can promise you that. And also to give you a little bit more of a background, Jane started the Navigator program. Did the breast come first, or did breast cancer Navigator came first? But really, my interface with the Navigator came with Jane with lung cancer. And we have a protocol for patients who have lung cancer where they start treatments where they're not surgically, able to go straight to surgery. And they have to have 5 weeks of chemotherapy and radiation. And then there's sort of a diving board or a stop-off point at that point where the patients would then get re-imaged to see how they're responding to treatment. Then they would go in to see the lung surgeon and then would get have the lung surgery if they're appropriate. And if not, they would continue with the chemotherapy and radiation. Now, that seems pretty easy, right? But before Jane started with us, that process could take anywhere between 2 and 3 months, where it really should take, you know, maybe 2 or 3 days. The patient should come in, finish their chemotherapy and radiation, get their imaging, see the thoracic surgeon, and then have a decision made. So by the following week, they know whether they're going to be having surgery in a few weeks or whether they're going to continue the radiation and the chemotherapy. That process, Angel, and mark my words, this is not an exaggeration, could have taken more than 2 months to occur. And the most, I guess, troublesome part wasn't really even the patients who were surgical candidates, because they would have had to wait anyway. The thing that was heartbreaking were the patients that were not surgical candidates. So they lost 2 months of their treatments that were delayed for no reason other than the fact that we were not able to achieve that timeliness of care. When Jane came in, and this is also, you know, to Sarah and all the other navigators all throughout the land, not just here, but in all different cancer centers, what a difference. It just has been a game changer. And I just wanted to share that experience. You know, Jane was my example, but it happens with Sarah every day with our breast navigator. It's almost sad that we don't have a navigator for every site.
It is.
Yeah, we wish we did.
That's exactly what I was thinking, to be very honest with you.
Wouldn't that be great to have a GU navigator, a GYN navigator?
And Sarah does with the head and neck cancer patients. She has to make sure that they have the dental evaluation and all of that is completed before they start radiation. And that can be really difficult because the cost of dentists, the fear of dentists, no offense dentists, all of that can really delay. And that's, again, very heartbreaking to see. But Sarah has broken down those walls and has made a humongous, you know, impact in improving that. So
I like to say, Jane, right, that in these cases, in these cancer cases, there's a lot of moving parts. And unfortunately, unless you have somebody that, and I say this at every consultation, I don't view the navigation services so much as a navigation service, but as an advocacy. You know, I think that first and foremost, you have two of the best oncology nurses in general here, as I'm sure all of them are, you know, again, throughout the land. But that's just, you know, that's just the introductory mandatory, you know, criteria to be a navigator. That just goes without saying that you have to be a great nurse. And then after that, you know, you have to be a great person. Maybe you have to be a great person even before being a great nurse, but, you know, you have to really care and you have to take your work home with you. Jane and Sarah, they share their cell phone, and that's very, you know, invasive, you know, to their home life, you know, and that phone rings all the time. As a matter of fact, you know, I have to laugh because the three of us give our cell phone numbers out and they'll call Jane, they'll call Sarah and they'll say, you know, I called you because I didn't want to bother Dr. Iannelli. And, you know, so I have to laugh. But they'll bother these guys, but they won't bother me. But it's just a great testament to them. But let's get straight into the paper, everybody. I have the egg timer going. And since these two ladies are also on the board of directors, they all know that we have a 30-minute cap to all of our episodes. Otherwise, we get whipped with our
Angel is really tough.
Shame. Yeah, there you go. Exactly.
Producer.
Yeah. Now, girls, I wish you would meet Len and Raina. They're just amazing. We've been using many of their papers and their works, and this is just one of them. So, they start the timely care. I would say part of the paper by saying heightened emotions upon a cancer diagnosis are likely to intensify the need for prompt action. Now, is that the understatement of the world or what? Cancer patients are already freaked out because they're getting, you know, hit in the face with the fact that they have cancer. They already are convinced they're going to die. And then all of a sudden, they're told, well, you have cancer, the biopsy is positive, you're going to go see the oncologist, we can get you in March 15th, you know. That just doesn't work, right? You're already at DEFCON 5. Then they go on to say delays in setting clinical appointments, starting treatment, or receiving test results can be excruciating. And I think that word is not hyperbole. I think that's really true. And could lead to dissatisfaction with the service. And even more important with people being dissatisfied is the severe emotional strain. You guys, I think, Sarah, you had kind of hit on that as well.
Yeah, definitely. It can be overwhelming for a patient. They get that diagnosis. They're told to do 10 different things, and they really just don't even know where to start. So if they have a navigator, we can do actually take over for them and get them where they need to be.
Uncertainty is a word that's used in the paper, and I think that's a really great word. Uncertainty is the issue, because if you think about it, patients want to know what will happen to them and when their treatments will begin. And you don't want to know, the funniest thing is that the sooner the patients get the information, the sooner they get started with their treatments, even if they're incredibly toxic, like in the case with Sarah and I when we're talking to patients about head and neck treatment, as scary as our consults are, as scary as the information is, their anxiety level drops like magnitudes by the initiation of therapy, even though they know they're going to be walking the plank and that they're going to be, you know, pretty much having difficulty swallowing, tasting, the whole thing, they're actually feel better once they're on that plank, as opposed to waiting to get on that plank. Jane?
Patients, when they hear about their imaging, they can see those tumors growing day by day, minute by minute. And that's probably not even true, but if it's you, it feels true. And it's very, very frightening. So the sooner you can get the care, the quicker you feel like something's being done.
Another word they mentioned in the paper, which I like, is being in limbo. That's unbearable. Another great word. We heard the word excruciating. We hear the word limbo. We hear the word unbearable. This being in limbo, waiting to get your appointments, getting everything set, it heightens the feeling of being powerless. Once a treatment plan is underway, a routine develops, and that routine can greatly reduce stress and anxiety. You've noticed that in your practice, I think.
Yes, knowing that you have a plan, just even having the plan really helps. Just the unknown is the most fearful thing.
And just to put it in perspective, every cancer center, as Raina and Len mentioned, have a wait time challenge. But everyone would agree that we can do better. I believe that Sarah just came into my office maybe 40 minutes ago, another terrible case of a patient who got treated for an anal rectal cancer, finished treatment a few months ago. You can tell the story.
Yep. So he finished with his treatment. He thought he was cured. He thought he was doing everything he needed to do. And a couple months after finishing treatment, he had called and said that he was having pain and discharge, which can be normal after treatment. So I told him, you know, you really need to follow up with your surgeon. You need to, you know, make sure that he sees you, examines you. Which I thought he was doing. He did. He did see his surgeon. But he basically kind of just said, you know what, you're good. We did a biopsy. The cancer's there, but we know that it's going to, your treatment is still going to continue working. So don't worry about it. And so he thought he was doing the right thing, not worrying about it, until the pain continued. And he called me again and said, you know, this pain, this discharge, it just keeps on coming. Why is it not getting better? And that's when I told him, well, you know what, let's have you see your medical oncologist, you know? And then he saw him and he was put on antibiotics, but still that didn't help. And it wasn't until he actually came in to see me and we were able to evaluate exactly what was going on. And he had to be seen down in the city because he had actually a wound from his treatments. It wasn't the cancer, it was actually from the treatment. So, you know, just trying to get somebody on the right track, it's tough.
Yeah, and I have to tell you, Angel, and to the Croc Nation, this is not unusual. As a matter of fact, it's almost seems to me, and I know this is not true because people will think, oh my God, I hope I never get cancer because this is such a nightmare. It almost seems to us it's every single case. And of course it's not, but it is very, very common. I will say too common that this type of dynamic occurs. And this is where the whole, again, what is our theme today? The theme is kindness. And as we try to do on every Croc podcast, we try to not only evaluate and put on the table a problem, but also try to come up with some solutions to those problems. And we're going to do that as well. But before we get to solutions, I really want to beat this dead horse until it really starts to neigh about what the steps are in this problematic issue. So what are the steps to the timeliness of care? So one of the problems is that in most cancer centers, you don't have what's called a captured medical staff. That means that each doctor is employed by the same medical system, and each doctor has that right then to sort of walk into a colleague's office and say, hey, I have a patient I need some help with. Can you see them today? And they say, yeah, we'll make room. You know, tell them to bring a book, but we'll see them sometime today. You know, you have a system most, I would think that's more common in the United States, where you have a bunch of private practitioners or a bunch of groups that are independent of each other. So a patient might come in to their primary care doctor and get a PSA, and the PSA is abnormal. Then that primary care doctor will call a urologist that he uses for his primary care practice. The urologist might say, I'd be happy seeing the patient, but I won't be able to see the patient for 3 weeks. They make the appointment. The patient goes in, sees the urologist at that 3 week point. Then the urologist says, yep, you have an abnormal PSA, you have an abnormal examination. We're going to do some scanning. That'll take another 2 weeks to get the scanning. Then the scanning is done. The patient comes back another 2 weeks later, and the doctor says, well, let's set you up for a biopsy, but I'm going to be on vacation, so why don't we do the biopsy in 3 weeks? So now we're almost 4 months into the game where that blood test was done, and you go in and have a biopsy. The biopsy will not get, the results of your biopsy probably won't get to you for another 2 weeks, and then it might be another 2 weeks where you know you have cancer, but then you go back to the urologist. Then the urologist will say, okay, I want you to see a radiation oncologist as well. And then you might have to wait 2 weeks to see a radiation oncologist. So now we're in month number five. You come to see the radiation oncologist, you talk, you get your second opinions, you make a decision on whether you want surgery, radiation, or whatever. Now we're 6 months into that blood test, and that is a normal circumstance in our cancer world. So as we said, we don't just identify problems, we try to solve them. So let's go through some opportunities we have. And you can see, Jane, Sarah. Yeah, please do. Yeah, please.
So the example that Dr. Iannelli gave was hypothetical, but we saw a patient yesterday had back pain back in October. Went through physical therapy. They kept turning her away. She went to the ER at least 3 times, went to urgent care at least 4 times, saw every doctor under the sun, and all of them minimized it, drug seeking, not drug seeking. Meanwhile, this poor lady, and she was very assertive for herself. She kept calling and saying, just can you please do imaging? They didn't even do an x-ray for like 2 months. And finally, after all those months, it was discovered she has metastatic lung cancer to her spine and her jaw. And actually, her jaw was like out to here. I mean, it's very sad and very, you know, unfortunate, especially in someone that was outspoken for herself. But what about these people that can't even speak for themselves or you know, timid? Wow. And so it's a real problem in many, many instances, much more than, you know, we realize.
Sarah, in your practice, would you say that's also a common?
Absolutely. Absolutely. You know, patients go to the, you know, they start to feel a sore throat or have ear pain. You know, we're not going to jump to the conclusion that somebody has cancer from those, you know, from those side effects or from symptoms. Their complaints and symptoms. But, you know, they go to the ER, they get put on antibiotics, and then, you know, wait a little bit. Oh, the antibiotics didn't work. A month goes by, goes back to their primary. Oh, maybe you should see an ENT. Just like Dr. Iannelli said, it just snowballs. It can get out of control.
Angel, you know, I'll use an analogy. It's like if you and I go to a Met game and we start with a Nathan's hot dog and we go on to a Shake Shack burger and maybe a shake and then maybe one of those soft serve ice cream cones and the little you know, blue and orange Met helmets, and then we do a little cookie, and then we say, we wait an inning or two, and we say, you know what, another hot dog really would feel really good about now. And then when we're leaving the stadium after another three beers and another two hot dogs, somebody interviews us and says to us, boys, how many calories do you think you put in, you know, at that baseball game? And I would say 400. And Angels would say, no, you're underestimating, 500. We just ate 500 calories. And they would say, well, what if we told you you just ingested 14,000 calories? And it's like, it doesn't even, you know, and I feel badly for the patient because, you know, they're allowing this time to go by, because I don't think anybody really is cognizant of the fact that that clock starts. You know, ever see those game shows where there's money flying and you get like a minute to put all the money you can into your pockets or whatever? You know, when that clock starts, you're like, you know, putting that money, you're like, oh my God, one second. But that's the way we should be with our cancer patients. We should have a clock. We should start that timer. We should be basically, you know, rushing, but not rushing to the point where we're doing a bad job, but really going out of our way. And I think one of the other problems, and I hate to say it, and this is another podcast, but, you know, people that go into the medical field, so the nurses, the doctors, I think a bad thing happened when we try to assert our need to have a balanced life. And not that I think a balanced life is bad, but if you want to do this job, I think you have to lose a little balance. And I think you have to really do a little bit more of the above and beyond and really sort of work more as this is a vocation than it is a job. And, you know, I think these young docs coming out, you know, they want a life, which is fine. And I think we've accepted that culture a little bit too readily. And I'm not saying that I want all of our medical team to burn out and all that type of thing, but you really should look at this as something a little more than a 9-to-5. And if you have to stay late, and if you have to do the above and beyond, I can't tell you how many Saturdays I come in here and one of these ladies is here working and doing their paperwork, and you know, it's just a testament to them, but we all need to do that little bit above and beyond. And that is the kindness that we're talking about, because if we did that, if doctors took those consult calls directly, if we had a relationship with the front desk where we could push people and double book them and do what we had to do to get them in, if we had special relationships with our referring physicians, and we could say, I need you to see this patient tomorrow, and I need this, and then we walk over to my friend Rita in x-ray, and we say, Rita, we need this MRI tomorrow, and then we go over to interventional radiology, and we say, you know, Alex, you know, Ramsey, we need this biopsy tomorrow. I think that's a way of imbuing kindness at the expense of our balance in order to help our patients get where they need to go and help them with this huge, huge problem, this timeliness of care. Angel, what are your thoughts?
The one thing I just keep thinking in my mind is, you know, the unfortunate thing is the profession you guys are in is a revolving door, right? But one of the things that I have foreseen as not being a patient, but a guest, is the controlling atmosphere that you all provide the patients. So the kindness that I have seen is walking through the double doors and seeing how everybody's on a name, first name basis with everyone, how it's, you almost feel like, for better lack of words, you feel like you're in a picnic or like a barbecue setting. You're walking through, people are...
How about a tailgate? Let's call it a tailgate.
Even better. And for those that don't know what a tailgate is, it's you're parking outside of the stadium before you go in, but it's a barbecue type of surrounding. You feel like it's home away from home. There we go. And I think that it goes back to the very beginning of where we started our journey here, you know, from the waiting room and hearing how the culture of doctors and nurses and navigators, there's they go above and beyond without a doubt. But what blows my mind is the cell phones. I mean, that, you know, listen, my primary care doctor is an old school doctor, and he is the one that does my blood. He's the one that calls me on his cell. He's the one that gives me his cell number. And that's the relationship that I have with my doctor. And I think that that is what is missing across the board with some places. And I think that your facility, your location, is a great teaching tool for what should be done. And it's very, very hard. It hurts me a little to know that the people that are going through all this and all these loops and hoops and different types of scenarios that they have to run through just to get to, you know, not even the finish line, but even like the starting line, feels as if we can do better. And I'm not even sure how to ask that question. You know, where does it begin? Where can we say this needs to be done and this needs to be done? And then, of course, ending with the fact that, yes, all doctors. See, I've always been in the impression that when you're a doctor, say goodbye to your life, because I've always believed that the doctors did nothing but become a doctor and just do patients and deal with patients. And for you to say that that culture is shifting makes me realize former episodes that we've talked about, how we come in and as the patient, we're the number. We're not the patient anymore. We're, what's wrong? Type, 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 type. Okay, type, 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 type. Let's do this. I'll see you in 3 weeks. Type, type, type. Have a good day. Where did it all end?
Because and you know, there was one aspect that the three of us get very frustrated, maybe even more frustrated by dealing with difficult colleagues or difficult systems or administrators, or, you know, hey, we're not going to schedule X amount of patients because we only have X amount of nurses or whatever. Like, you know, all of those things are frustrating for sure. But I think there's a new player in the fold that is adding to this frustration, and that's the insurance companies. We even have opportunities where we get patients in immediately and we get them their same day x-rays and we get them their procedures same day. And we have all the physicists and the dosimetrists and the therapists working together to get a treatment plan ready in 3 days that really should take 2 weeks in order for the patient to start chemo radiation. And all of a sudden we're told this patient can't start because they don't have insurance authorization. And you can't get a peer-to-peer review with a doctor on the insurance side for 4 days. You know, that's a new struggle for us.
Yeah. And also, though, you know, Dr. Iannelli is one that leads by example. And this whole department, it's very difficult not to be the achiever when the person that's leading is doing the right thing. And I think that's so important because it's a team effort, and you can't have someone on top not really caring, because then everyone's going to be in that same sort of mind frame. So we're very fortunate to have Dr. Iannelli and Dr. Gonzalez, both wonderful, caring physicians, and they've set the tone to be kind and to be caring. And the look on patients' faces is, it's so special when they're leaving, because when they come in, it's so tense. And when they're leaving, they're like, thank you so much, because I am 100% comfortable now, where we were terrified when we walked in, but now we feel like family. It's a great compliment.
That's wonderful for you to say, but that might be because I do a shot of tequila with every patient that walks in the door. So I mean, I think that we're all half in the bag by the time the consultation is over, Angel.
Let me just add one thing, because I've always said this on my show, and I think this is a great way to insert this. Iannelli, you know, you lead by example, but you control your environment. And what better way to control your environment? There's a way you can do that. You can say you control your atmosphere by either becoming a thermometer or you're a thermostat. And I believe that you're a thermostat because you can control that environment.
Well, that's nice of you to say, but I am surrounded by excellence. And then, you know, again, Dr. Gonzalez and I would be on Skid Row if it wasn't for our navigators and our nurses and everybody here. And that's a really good time to end because it's at 31 minutes, 39 seconds. And our board of directors are going to be very proud of us girls. Angel Santana, anything to add before we sign off?
No, it's always a pleasure to have the board here, but more importantly, to have people that can know that there's real, true professionals out there that care about the patient and less about what their title is. So for that, I thank you.
Yeah, we're probably going to go back to the subject because there's so much. It's such a dense subject, timely care. We'll probably give it a little bit more. These professionals here to my right and left, Jane O'Malley, Sarah Sargente, they will be back to do a more formal podcast on navigation services just in general. And Angel Santana, have faith, let it begin. Thank you for everything. To our board of directors, thank you for your hard work. To our friend, Rod Freeman, Small Biz Up, thank you, Rod. You're a wonderful man and you're a great human, and thank you for helping. If anybody needs help with their small business, please call him. Michael John Benzea, Charlotte Larson, for your continued support. And of course, we end this podcast as we do every podcast. On behalf of Angel, Jane, Sarah, the entire board, we wish all of our beloved survivors, all of our dear patients, all of our friends suffering through the cancer journey, we wish you a long, healthy, happy, and cancer-free life. May God be with you. May God love you. May God protect you. Peace.